The following episode of K-Voice was recorded at 1:16 a.m., June 30th, 2017. Things may have changed by the time you listen to this show. Enjoy the show.
He is disgusting. And I'll say this about Republicans. I'm really tired of hearing words like disappointed, like disturbed, like I'm bothered, like I wish he wouldn't do it. It's time that somebody looks at the camera and looks at him and calls him up and says, listen, you crazy lunatic 70-year-old man baby, stop it. You are now the president of the United States, the commander-in-chief, and you need to stop acting like a mean girl.
Anna Navarro on CNN. Hello. Thank you for listening to K Voice of Resistance. That's the letter K, Voice of Resistance. I'm your host, Kelly the Voice. Civil rights leader Diane Nash says, freedom by definition is people realizing that they are their own leaders. So let's be our own leaders and get informed. Here's the news. EPA administrator and personification of bigoted mansplaining Scott Pruitt had a private meeting with Dow Chemical just weeks before it was announced that he would be denying the petition to allow Dow Chemical's pesticide from being sprayed all over our food. The House has declared war on immigrants and sanctuary cities. Kate's Law, which increases prison sentences for immigrants who re-enter the country, the No Sanctuary for Criminals Act, and Sarah's and Grant's Law punishes sanctuary cities. All passed in the House on Thursday. Before we get too upset about this, however, it still has to go to the Senate. Kate's Law has been introduced before and failed to get the 60 votes needed to advance to the Senate last year. It did pick up 3 Democratic votes from SCAD. Senator Joe Donnelly, North Dakota Senator Heidi Heitkamp, and West Virginia Senator Joe Manchin. So you have any of those senators, you start calling them now. That's an order. To pass the Senate, Republicans need 5 Democrats to join the Republicans in voting yes. And other red state Democrats have already voted against the bill. So the Sanctuary Cities bill could garner even less support as lawmakers protest the cuts in law enforcement funding. So be ready to contact your senator when the time comes. Republican Senator Pat Roberts of Kansas compared the AHCA, the charming little bill set to throw 22 million people off health care and cause deaths and bankruptcies galore, to cute animals banging. On Wednesday, a reporter asked Roberts how the GOP will ever reconcile its hellish desire to jeopardize constituents' lives so that healthcare can be prohibitively expensive with their political opposition responsibility to stop that from happening, and he responded, quote, even porcupines make love. Once in Glacier National Park, I saw 2 porcupines making love. I'm assuming they produce smaller porcupines. They produce something. It has to be done carefully. That's what we're doing now. Unquote. The best part of this whole thing is the AP actually fact-checked this. And yes, he is correct. It is tricky. But unlike lawmakers, porcupines have their mission figured out. They then went on to describe the lovemaking of porcupines. In other news.
Okay, so let's get to the tax policy. So as I understand it, and I'm just reading this, so I may have it wrong, but there's an investment tax in here, the net investment income tax. And as far as I know, it only kicks in on couples making over $250,000 a year. So it's a tax on wealthy investors, and you're eliminating it. In a
yeah, 3.8% tax. Yeah,
that's exactly right. So I guess my question is, looking at the last election, was the message of that election really, we need to help investors? I mean, the Dow is over 20,000. Are they really the group that needs the help?
Tucker Carlson of Fox Quote News, unquote, actually said something that wasn't a load of crap. Listen to him as he comes down on the AHCA and Paul Ryan.
But also, I mean, you have the overview here is that all the wealth basically in the last 10 years is stuck to the top end. That's one of the reasons we've had all this political turmoil, as you know. And so kind of a hard sell to say, yeah, we're going to repeal Obamacare, but we're going to send more money to the people who've already gotten the richest over the last 10 years. I mean, that's what this does, no? I'm not a leftist. It's just that's true.
Barbara Lee, Democratic Congresswoman from Oakland, on why she would not vote on the AUMF back in 2001.
However difficult this vote may be, some of us must urge the use of restraint. Our country is in a state of mourning. Some of us must say, let's step back for a moment. Let's just pause just for a minute and think through the implications of our actions today so that this does not spiral out of control.
the authorization for use of military force. The House originally passed the AOMF 420-1 on September 14th, 2001. And proving this country has no sense of self-discipline in the face of panic, it passed the Senate 98-0 later the same day. The 2001 AUMF authorized the president to use all necessary and appropriate force against those nations, organizations, or persons he determines planned, authorized, committed, or aided the terrorist attacks that occurred on September 11th, 2001, in order to prevent future attacks on the U.S. by those actors.
Let us not become the evil that we deplore. Thank you, and I yield the balance of my time.
The 2001 AUMF had been invoked more than 37 times to authorize troop deployments and other military measures, including detentions at Guantanamo Bay and military trials for terrorism suspects, and was used to justify the deployment of U.S. forces in Afghanistan and the Philippines, Georgia, Yemen, Djibouti, Kenya, Ethiopia, Eritrea, Iraq, and Somalia. This has never been brought up to debate again, essentially so Congress could keep its hands clean and not be on the record for difficult votes on military actions or war. They have refused to even bring the AUMF up for debate in Congress. This is, of course, until now. Barbara Lee has yet again introduced the amendment to put an end to the AUMF, and in a powerful rebuke of our president, his policies, and in the face of his instability and ignorance, the powerful Republican-led Appropriations Committee voted unanimously and to applause to approve her amendment. Be ready. This will go to the Senate, and we will need to push our senators to once and for all put an end to the AUMF. Cosby's, 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 people are spinning, spinning, spinning like a fidget spinner on a Friday in math class. We have a follow-up. If you recall, I reported recently on Cosby's disgusting plan to dangle his degenerate ass in front of devoted and deplorable fans, decrying those pesky laws dedicated to protecting people from sexual assault. Well, seemingly, the outcry has derided his plans, and he has decided not to inflict such deleterious wisdom on the people. Are you ready for this spin? Here's his spokesperson on CNN.
At first, I just want to be clear that town hall meetings are not about sexual assault. I will repeat, these town hall meetings are not about sexual assault. This went way beyond a comment made from an interview by my colleague a couple days ago. When we initially talked about the town hall meetings, it was about restoration of legacy. Much to what Mrs. Cosby spoke on in her statement is the sensationalism brought on by the media. This is another example of that. To take something that was meant to talk about the restoration of this man's legacy that was destroyed by the media before he even had a chance to step into the courtroom, that's what this is about.
The media. That lying fake news that is so set to smear poor, vulnerable family man Cosby. You know, the media just doesn't give men a fair shake. Wait, what's that? Oh, this just in from my control room. Cameras were rolling this time she's currently lying about? Let's give it a listen.
We are now planning town halls, and we're going to be coming to this city sometime in July.
Like a town hall, just talk with people?
We'll talk to young people, because this is bigger than Bill Cosby. You know, this issue can affect any young person, especially young athletes of today. And they need to know what they're facing when they're hanging out and partying, when they're doing certain things that they shouldn't be doing. And it also affects, you know, married men.
Is it kind of a do as I say, not as I
do? Laws are changing. Laws are changing. The statute of limitations for victims of sexual assault are being extended. So this is why people need to be educated on a brush against a shoulder. You know, anything at this point can be considered sexual assault. It's very, it's a good thing to be educated about the law.
There you go. The spin. So we don't know what his comeback tour will look like, but you can bet I'll be there practicing my projectile spitting. This just in. A president was sexist for the first time since, you know, yesterday.
When I first saw the tweet this morning, I was frankly disgusted. I thought to myself, this dude has got such a fixation with women and blood. What is wrong with him? And then you remember that this dude, this disgusting dude, is the president of the United States.
That was Anna Navarro on CNN, a Republican, by the way. Quote, low IQ crazy Mika, along with Psycho Joe, she was bleeding badly from a facelift. Unquote.
I suspect the president's not going to accept your advice, but what do you believe he needs to do to fix this?
Stop. Look, if you can't control your tweeting habits, then stop tweeting. Go seek therapy. Go knit. Find a hobby. Talk to your wife. Do anger management. You've got to realize once and for all, you are no longer just Donald Trump. You're no longer just speaking for Trump Tower and Trump brand and Trump hotels and Trump steaks. You are speaking for an entire country. And our people do not deserve to be embarrassed and be represented by somebody who is so unfit for the job. So you've got to start pivoting. You've got to start acting presidential. You should have started 6 months ago, but start now if you couldn't do it back then.
Our sexual predator-in-chief sexism was on display this weekend, and everyone acted surprised. It is about as surprising as my Happy Meal last night coming with greasy food. Appalled, I respect. But is it in the least bit surprising that the man who bragged about walking into dressing rooms of teenage girls said something sexist to an Irish reporter, or that he made abusive, crude comments about Mika Brzezinski from MSNBC's Morning Joe? Surprising? The man allegedly threw his wife on the bed, ripped her hair out by the roots before raping her. So are we surprised? We shouldn't be. I have to agree with the White House on this.
They knew what they were getting when they voted for Donald Trump and he won overwhelmingly.
Sarah, how is insulting a woman on Twitter being a fighter?
What about the...
All that being said, I am glad that there is still outrage and a call for integrity in an office that was once held with high regard. I'm glad that this was headlines because it does matter and it is important, and it further makes pervasive sexism okay. The attack continues this assault on the media, and it was icing on the cake to his sexist comments to the Irish Reporter earlier this week.
And where are you from? Go ahead, come here. Where are you from? Should we have all of this beautiful Irish press. Where are you from?
I'm from RTE News. Katrina
Perry. She has a nice smile on her face, so I bet she treats you well.
I understand this whole compliment thing can be confusing. It is something women struggle to explain throughout our lives. Of course, women want to be seen as attractive to a certain degree. You see, flattery plays on a primal level in women. Primarily, a woman's survival depends on a man finding her attractive enough to have her bear and rear his offspring. This way, he won't kill her, and he will likely defend her from being killed by other men. Not only that, in a system where a woman's power is limited, one of the sources of power a woman has is her looks. That is why women put so much effort into their looks. It is symptomatic of the system. The problem here is, once it becomes more about looks than it is about intelligence, effort, or skill, a woman becomes diminished and her power is lost. Chris McCumber, an assistant professor of sociology at Meredith College in Raleigh, North Carolina, said Donald's comments reflect, quote, textbook paternalistic sexism, which is often couched in a playful tone, as if she should feel flattered. Unquote. A woman wishes to be more than her looks. A woman who is a professional, or a woman with a skill who has worked hard to obtain what position she has, and for it to be dismissed by attention to her looks is crushing. And it at the same time serves as a reminder that a woman's value or worth could be diminished should her looks fade. And this conversation, of course, goes three times over when a man is telling her she is sexy. It is very rarely acceptable for a man to tell a woman she is sexy. Unless she is rolling out of bed after sex with that man, it is not cool to say she is sexy, as though sex object is her goal when achieving her degree or at work or buying groceries. It goes to the same discussion over telling women to smile. We have a perception of women that women are supposed to be outwardly pleasing all the time. Telling a woman to smile smacks of, I, woman, am here for you. I am here for your pleasure. You are telling me what I can do to improve your experience of me today. You know what? I am not here for you. This is not a conservative thing. It is not a liberal thing. It is a universal issue. One self-proclaimed feminist friend of mine, Tony, still argues with me on this and refuses to stop, despite my efforts. His unwillingness to hear my point of view and respect my wishes betrays his professed progressive feminist values. Here's a tip for anyone who thinks that they have a valid argument to why they are doing something is not sexist despite the popular opinion of women. It doesn't matter what your argument is. It doesn't matter what your intentions are. Your argument is no longer valid. If women don't like it, it is time to stop. And while we are on the topic of respect.
The family of Philando Castile devastated for a second time in a year. This time it was the not guilty verdict on all counts against a police officer that took his life. The first time, the day that police officer Geronimo Yanez shot Castile to death while he was in the car with his girlfriend and her four-year-old daughter, pulled a traffic stop.
Almost 1 year ago, Philando Castile was murdered by Minnesota police officer Geronimo Yanez after a traffic stop. That murderer was allowed to live free and return to his family with no consequences. Philando would never get that opportunity. Black lives encounter threats, obstructions, limits, and disadvantages in nearly all things in this symptomatically racist, biased society. When Michael Brown was shot to death by a white police officer in Ferguson, Missouri in August 2014, it awakened a movement that began with the previous killings of yet another black teenager, Trayvon Martin, who was shot in 2012 by Neighborhood Watch volunteer George Zimmerman. Brown's death was not the first of its kind since Martin's. Just a month prior, Eric Garner died after being placed in a chokehold by NYPD officers. Both deaths sparked protests across the country, protests that were renewed when grand juries declined to charge the officers involved in either case. The national outcry has cast light on similar cases from the past year, some leading to charges against police officers, others not. But one constant holds true. Black men and women continue to die at the hands of police, and no justice seems in sight. Recently, three cases started with a traffic stop. A black man is pulled over by a police officer. Why? He was missing a front license plate. Or because the cop thought the driver looked like a robbery suspect. Regardless of the reason, the outcome was the same. Samuel Dubois, Seville Smith, and Philando Castile, none of them survived. The police officers fired their weapons, saying they feared for their lives. The three shootings are on video, which was scrutinized by lawyers and repeatedly played over and over and over for the juries, and yet, despite all evidence, not one of the former police officers were found guilty. Two were acquitted, and one trial ended in deadlock. Prosecutors haven't had much success convicting police officers in high-profile cases, even when the shooting is on video. The lack of convictions has riled advocates and victims' families who say the system is stacked in the favor of law enforcement and disregards black lives. As the death toll rises, we see no end in sight for the systematically and institutionally sanctioned murder of Americans based on race. And now we have an attorney general who is not only putting a halt to investigations into police departments, he is ramping up the mass incarceration effort and providing more latitude to police to have their way with the communities they police. In regards to the recent acquittal handed down by Philando Castile, Trevor Noah, The Daily Show, had a rare and serious moment and a few things to say.
I won't lie to you, when I watched this video, it broke me. Like, it broke me. It's one thing to have the system against you, the district attorneys, the police unions, the courts, that's one thing. But when a jury of your peers, your community, sees this evidence, and decides that even this is self-defense, that is truly depressing. Because what they're basically saying is, in America, it is officially reasonable to be afraid of a person just because they are black.
The impenetrable blue line is powerful. On April 12, 2015, Freddie Carlos Gray Jr., 25-year-old black man was arrested by the Baltimore Police Department for possessing what police alleged was an illegal switchblade. While being transported in the police van, he was subjected to what is known as a rough ride. Gray fell into a coma and was taken to a trauma center. Gray died on April 19, 2015. His death was ascribed to injuries to his spinal cord. On April 21st, 2015, pending an investigation of the incident, six Baltimore police officers were suspended with no pay and no convictions were made. And still, shenanigans never stop.
As the city's chief prosecutor, I've been sworn to uphold justice and to treat every individual within the jurisdiction of Baltimore City equally and fairly under the law. I take this oath seriously, and I want the public to know that my administration is committed to creating a fair and equitable justice system for all. No matter what your occupation, your age, your race, your color, or your creed, it is my job to examine and investigate the evidence of each case and apply those facts to the elements of a crime in order to make a determination as to whether individuals should be prosecuted. This is a tremendous responsibility, but one that I sought and accepted when the citizens of Baltimore City elected me as a state's attorney. And it's precisely what I did in the case of Freddie Gray.
The prosecutor who doggedly pursued those police officers, Marilyn Mosby, is under fire. On May 17th, the coalition of law enforcement officers, attorneys, and community officials formed a super PAC dedicated to ousting Mosby from her position as Baltimore City's state's attorney. See, cops are all kinds of upset because Mosby came after them. The Root makes the point that, quote, Mosby's critics allege that she was overzealous in prosecuting the police officers who faced trial on charges of killing Gray, who died after being found badly injured in the back of a police vehicle following a 2015 arrest. They accused her of defaming their names and conducting a secret investigation. They even say that Mosby filed charges that were harsher than the crimes committed. Go back and read the previous paragraph and replace the word police with any black-sounding name, and notice how unremarkable that statement seems. Unquote. I'll take that challenge. Critics allege that she was overzealous in prosecuting Jamal, who faced trial on charges of killing Gray, who died after being found badly injured back of Jamal's vehicle. He accuses her of defaming his name and conducting a secret investigation. They even say that Mosby filed charges that were harsher than the crimes committed. Yep. Unremarkable as hell. In other words, they were angry at Mosby for treating cops the same heavy-handed, one-sided police officers treat black suspects every day. David Jaros, an associate professor from the University of Baltimore School of Law, suggested that Mosby's actions were consistent with how the justice system routinely treats suspects, saying, I love how surprised people are by the fact that the prosecutor may have overcharged. This is something prosecutors do all the time. It is a strategic choice for various reasons. It is ironic that suddenly the Fraternal Order of Police is up in arms over this. And as The Root points out, quote, part of the cop's lawsuit against Mosby is that she conducted her own investigation outside of the Baltimore Police Department instead of letting the police look into Gray's death, which would have been as unthinkably stupid as asking Republican senators to investigate whether a Republican senator and a Republican president are guilty of colluding with... Wait, oh, that's probably a bad example. Unquote. We need to combat these thugs who are super packing their opposition to and intimidation of Mosby. It is a rare attorney who has the courage and tenacity to stand up to such a force, and she needs our support. The whole of the black community needs our support. I will never understand the struggles they face every day. I will not pretend to. Now I know not everyone who listens is black. We can, at the very least, try to. For those of us seeking a deeper understanding, I have some recommended reading. Check out A Colony in a Nation by Christopher Hayes. I know, I'm recommending a book written by a white dude to better understand the black experience. But it's a good place to start to understand the systematic problems in America. America likes to tell itself that it inhabits a post-racial world. Yet by every empirical measure, wealth, unemployment, incarceration, school segregation, all reveal that racial inequality has barely improved since 1968, when Richard Nixon became our first law and order president. Hayes contends that our country was fractured in two, the colony and the nation. In the nation, we venerate law. In the colony, we obsess over order, fear Trump's civil rights, and aggressive policing resembles occupation. A colony and a nation explains how a country founded on justice now looks like something uncomfortably close to a police state, but only for those in black communities. Also, donate to Colors of Change. Colors of Change is building a new, effective strategy for changing the rules society lives by and ending injustices black people face. And they have success stories in many of their efforts. Go to colorsofchange.org. In honor of our shiny new Attorney General, Jefferson Beauregard Sessions III, who's responsible for single-handedly, in a few short months, rolling back years of criminal justice reform, we have a call to action. A bipartisan group of senators has introduced Bill S-842, the Fair Chance Act, to ban federal employers and contractors from asking applicants about their criminal history until final stages of the hiring process. The bill, which includes exceptions from propositions in fields like law enforcement, national security, also requires the Bureau of Justice Statistics to issue a report on formerly incarcerated people's employment and statuses. The Fair Chance Act was last introduced in 2015 when the Homeland Security and Governmental Affairs Committee passed it unanimously. Up to 3/4 of formerly incarcerated people are unable to find jobs post-release, thanks in large part to employer discrimination. Employment among formerly incarcerated individuals traps them in poverty and increases the risk of recidivism. What else are you gonna do for money when you can't get a job? The effects of unemployment will be especially dire in jurisdictions like Maine, where Republicans are pushing to add work requirements for public assistance programs like Medicaid. Formerly incarcerated people should not continue to be punished for their crimes after they have served their sentences. Now is the time for Congress to end hiring discrimination against formerly incarcerated people and to give them a fair chance to contribute to our society. The Senate Homeland Security Governmental Affairs Committee voted and passed the Fair Chance Act on May 17th. The bill now awaits a full vote on the Senate floor. Call your senator. Thank you for listening to K-Voice of Resistance, available for download on crabdiving.com. That is C-R-A-B-D-I-V-I-N-G, one word. You can also get K-Voice on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever it is you like to podcast. Catch Ryan Pfeiffer and Patrick Vile on their flagship show, The Crab Diving Podcast, also streaming live from 2 to 4, Monday through Friday. On July 2nd, that is this Sunday, we are marching for impeachment. There's a worldwide impeachment march going on, so go to impeachmentmarch.org to find one near you. Trump has been in blatant violation of the Constitution from the day he was sworn into office as president. The Constitution gives the House of Representatives the sole power to impeach an official, and it makes the Senate the sole court for impeachment trials. It is time that the congressional representatives do their job and start the process to impeach this president. Trump has committed constitutional breaches, consistently lied, cheated, and enforces laws that primarily benefit him, his billionaire friends, at the expense of the country. Join on July 2nd. There will be marches in every major city and probably most of the small ones as well. So be sure you check it out. It's not going to be one you want to miss. Even if you're afraid the pence will be worse, it'll be good to come out. Be with your people. Feel like you're part of the resistance, part of a community. At the very least, go out, speak out against this president, against this administration, and against this government. If you have never marched, it is incredibly invigorating. It feels good. Yell, scream. Make a sign. Make a statement. Make your voice heard. Show them our numbers. Show them our passion and show them our anger. Take care of yourselves out there, but whatever you do, resist.
Living today in the USA, where ethics can be bought, and the Attorney General's trying to take away your pot. Even despite the dossier, we're living in a show where everybody has no shame, and they're always placing blame. You gotta see them on TV making outrageous claims. You gotta be where everybody has no shame. Congressman,
creepy